Good morning and welcome to Sport and Life with Sam Kakovich and Leon Wigard. Sam, how are you?
I'm outstanding, Leon. Recuperating, I must confess.
Yes, Sam's had a new hip put in, and how many operations is that?
I've had hip replacement. I've had a number of them, Leon. I don't know exactly the last tally, but it's getting to double digits. But the result, the good result, the good news is that the result, the outcome is favourable.
And did they, had they craned the new hip in?
You're breaking up. You know, there's a side of you, Leon, that
well, I met your surgeon the day that you had the operation.
That's right.
He came up to Baruga to play golf. That's how worried about him. About you he was.
Yeah, I wonder now.
David Young, what a man.
Yeah, what a man, a great orthopaedic. Now I understand why when I pressed the button, you know, in a sense of urgency at the nurse's button, no one responded. He was playing golf, was he? Oh, wait till I see that surgeon. David Young, oh my God.
Well, marvellous bloke. He, while we're talking about that topic, he built a hospital in Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka.
He does a lot of training and coaching, all free.
Look, he would be embarrassed if we knew that we're discussing his benevolence and altruism. He has got a 24/7 commitment to charities. The hospital, he also serves as the medico for all Afghanistan and Sri Lankan cricket clubs. He ferries, at his own personal cost, doctors or interns from Pakistan, from Bangladesh, from all those countries, and has them resident here for a week or two. They stay in the theatre with him to come up to speed with the latest technology in orthopaedic surgery. At his own expense.
A mad Footscray man.
And he's also a mad Footscray man, but he's also a mad historian. He lives in a great castle down near Ivanhoe, which is restored to its original state. But he does a lot in terms of heritage, the restoration of the Victoria's heritage. He is an unbelievable diverse person.
Well, that should get you a discount off your next operation. Now,
well, I don't seek. No, see, that's that Fitzroy part of you is looking for. I've always said to you, Leon. See, you, the first thing that you utter out of your mouth is redemption, redeeming, discounting. What have I always said to you? Self, features, and benefits. Don't ever discount your. Once you start discounting, Leon, you're starting to compromise your values and your standards.
Where's he going?
Sell your. Have confidence in the product that you're selling, Leon. See, Fitzroy would have been a far better off if you had said to the AFL, this is a quality product, been here for in excess of 100 years, and you've got the temerity of suggesting that we're not going to be part of the landscape. I'm going to have you remind you.
This is coming from a North Melbourne bloke.
Oh, I forgot that. Sorry, I apologise.
Anyway, yes, you're a good man. And the other thing I did before we got on to our first guest today, I went to Stawell.
Oh, you did. That was
and,
great.
And I went up there to help and celebrate the 125th anniversary of the foundation of the Stawell Golf Club. A beautiful look. When you had a place like Baruga, you're there for a golf trip, and we had 28 on our group, so you don't mix with the locals very much. But with this one, Stawell, what a wonderful group of people.
Mate, country folk, we've always said that. There's something unique about them. And that's not to differentiate or disparage against city folk, but there is something unique about country folk, whether it's the pace of the place or whether it's sense of community or whatever. I was a country boy. But, you know, you mentioned 125 years of history. How important that is, you know. I always say to people, you know, the importance of yesterday moving forward. You know, the value of the preservation of that club historically to a community is an imperative.
Maintained by the locals.
By the locals, yeah.
He's just working bees. They've got one guy on the part payroll, and he was formerly with the penal organisation over there, there.
Couldn't question his propriety.
And but he does a wonderful job as a curator. So anyway, and we've got a country boy as our first guest, and I'm very pleased to welcome John Anderson from the Herald Sun, best known that way, John, but you've got a big list of other places that you're working at. Was that that the crowd in the background?
Yeah, crowd in the back.
Keep it there. Keep it there.
The great John Anderson.
Thanks, Liam.
Now, just rural, country, where are you from?
I grew up at a place called Bowyer Thuna, which is near Glen Rowan.
Yeah.
Going towards Yarrawonga. Went to a school like Keck. I was a country boy. We had a wheat and sheep farm. I went to school at Bowyer Primary, Liam, which was not an area that had a pub or a post office, just tennis courts in one corner. And the other corner of the paddock, there was a one-room school. And I was one of 15 kids that went to Bowyer Primary School. I was always a prodigy in English. I think you'll find the history books will show that I finished third every year in English, a class of four, which probably devalues it a little bit. I had Colin McFan cover.
No third dividend. No,
exactly.
NTD.
So I was always going to be a judo based on those things, but end up going to high school in Wangaratta for a couple of years, where I saw Keke play footy at Myrtleford in about 1966, 67. And then I went down to board in Geelong at a school called Geelong College for the last 4 years. And, pretty idyllic upbringing.
And were you always going to be a journo?
I wanted to be a sports journo from as early as I can remember. Yeah, always fanatical about whatever sport, whether it would be Cassius Clay, as he was then, fighting Sonny Liston. I remember watching that as an eight-year-old. Geelong supporter because of Polly Farmer. Test cricket, went down, saw Doug Walters in his second test at the MCG. Horse racing, sadly. So I followed a lot of sports very closely.
So the move from the country to Geelong, that's been the making of a whole lot of people, those good colleges, but not always. It's the undoing.
It wasn't for me. I would have preferred to stay at high school. I love Wang High School, possibly something to do with the co-educational facet. I would have thought I had early aspirations in that area, Leon. And at Geelong College, it was a bit harder because it was an all-boys school, so I had to go up the road to Hermitage and Barongo.
That's not really a deterrent these days, you know.
Exactly. But there was a lot of good things. You play sport at those schools. You play on some of the best ovals in Australia at those APS schools. So that was the highlight for me. But
now, a Kekovic and a Uyghur, we never get a problem meeting people of our same age, same name rather. But a John Anderson, although you're a J-O-N, that's a more common name.
I'll tell you a quick story about that.
Scandinavian almost, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a touch of that.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
I'm a Jonathon, so I shortened that to John because I'm not big on that name. And about 15 years ago, I got rung up by a bloke I didn't know from Canberra, said, "Will you come up and speak at the press club?" And I thought this was a bit above my pay grade. But anyway, I said, "Yeah, of course I will." And so I couldn't wait to get off the phone to tell Mum and Dad that their son was going to speak at the press club where they'd been watching the luminaries of Australian political life. I said, "How much?" He said, $3,000. I thought, crikey, $300's a lot for me. $3,000, that's what Kekka gets on a bad day. So anyway, I went up. They said, "We'll have someone to meet you at the airport." Never been to Canberra before. Got there, there's a bloke waiting with John Anderson. I went up to him and said, "G'day, mate." He said, "G'day." He said, "I've ignored me." That's pretty rude. I said, "I'm John Anderson." He said, "No, you're not." I said, "What do you mean, no, I'm not?" I said, "That's my name. I'll pull my licence out and prove it to you." He said, "No, you don't look like him." I said, "What do I meant to look like?" He said, I said, "I'm the speaker today at the press club." He said, "No, you're not." And I said, "Mate, I'm not going to argue about this, but you've rung me or someone's rung me to get me to come up here." He said, "No." Nah. I said, "I don't get where this is coming from." He said, "Were you the Deputy Prime Minister of Australia?" I said, "No, I'm a sports journo for the Herald Sun." He said, "We got a problem." I said, "I haven't got a problem. You're paying me $3,000 no matter what happens. I'll go to this press club and speak," which I did. And they turned it horrible, which Keck's never experienced, Liam, but when the crowd starts to speak amongst themselves after 5 minutes, you know you've lost them. And I'm talking about my career in the amateurs with old Geelong and D grade, or the lofty heights of E grade. So
and Canberra, they understand that.
Oh, well, maybe, yeah. Anyway, I got out of there as quickly as I could, but I copped my three. That was the main thing. And I spoke at the press club. You been there, Keck?
I had. I spoke at the press club, yeah.
Yeah.
So John Anderson. Now, Ando, this is something I've often meant to ask you. What's the all-time greatest sports person in your mind?
People I've seen or... I mean,
well, I know, that's one of those complicated questions. I mean, you have to divide it up, don't you? But honestly, even by reputation, you haven't seen...
All right, if I've seen Garfield Sabres bat and Graham Pollock bat and Ricky Ponting bat and Sachin Tendulkar and all the rest of them, if they average around 50 to 60, Greg Chappell, And another bloke averages around 100, which is Sir Donald Bradman. Well, I didn't see him play, but surely, to me, he has to be that much better. There's a bloke currently playing baseball in America, nicknamed Showtime Ohtani. He's just signed up with for 10 years, I think, at $700 million with the LA Dodgers. Now, he does something which no one since Babe Ruth has done, which is pitch and hit. He can't do both, and Babe Ruth only did it for 2 years. So he might be as talented as anyone ever. That might sound a big call, but that's how good he is, the Japanese.
Well, both pitcher. Those are pretty specific to one country, though, aren't they? Well, baseball, maybe mainly Australia, although it's big in Japan and elsewhere, but mainly known in America.
Yep.
Cricket's mainly known in the British.
Yeah, then soccer. Oh, soccer you can't pick, or AFL football, I couldn't say one person. No. But if I went to a game tomorrow to watch a player, yeah, he'd kick it. But you know, I love watching kick, and I was at home as a Murray boy, and he had that excitement about him. I remember asking the late Ron Barassi, who was the closest player he saw to Gary Ablett Sr., who's the best, most talented player I've seen, and he said Kekker, when he was going, was that sort of player, which is a big, you know, coming from Ron, that was a huge rap.
Yeah, it was a great 10 minutes, that.
Yeah, but, you know, no, was it?
Wow. All my life I've copped that.
Yeah, well, you have.
Just a battering. You wonder why I'm still around.
It's been a life of hardship, Kick.
Well, I've been pummeled as a mission, but, you know, I've been brought up by good stock, who've always taught me there's no excuse for bad manners. And, you know...
It was your stock. You said earlier you were freedom fighters. Montenegrins.
Now, John, let's stick to the terms of reference.
Sorry.
Yeah. You became a journo. Now, I suspect you got a voracious love of sport, a manic obsession with sport.
Yes.
That would be a prerequisite, I'd suspect, of being, you know, wanting to be associated with journalism. But there's, you know, it's one thing to say I love my sport, I want to be involved in it. But there's another thing, putting it into print,
yep,
to make it enjoyable, to make it readable, and to be accepted by the editors.
Well,
so you must have been a man of letters. Did you enjoy English at school?
Yeah.
Did you write essays?
Yeah, I did. I used to write. Were
you a capable and competent writer? Did you have a broad lexicon? Or a vocab?
It's fair to say, Kekin, I did year 12 and I didn't kick it out of the ballpark, but English I got an A, so I can stand by that.
Yeah,
that
course.
Was an area I was okay in. And I didn't study one of the books, An Australian Ugliness, it was called, by Robin Boyd. No, don't read it. Please don't put yourself through it. So I thought I'll pass on that, but I did well on the other three books.
Right.
Man for All Seasons is one of them, which you'd remember.
Yeah, I do.
But when I started journalism, and Liam was one
who
of the
were
people.
You, who were the guys that you looked up to? And
journos, well, probably guys like, remember Ron Taylor?
Yeah.
He was a racing writer for the Truth.
He was a hero.
Great bloke.
Tony Lester was a racing writer for The Age. Not just racing. Alf Brown was the big doyen.
He was the doyen of footy.
And I'd read Alf Brown on a Friday night in the Herald, where he'd preview what was going to happen the next day in the game.
That was a must read, wasn't it? Two pages of it.
Yeah, cricket. Peter McFarlane, someone I will remember.
Yeah, Macca still, great writer.
Really good writer. But, you know, and then later on, probably Mike Shear and I worked with a lot. I had a lot of respect for him. But when I started, you were a reporter to report the news. And then what it has become now, they all want to write their own opinion.
Yeah.
So you come in, you've got to do the hard yards. Leon was very good to me when I started. There were a number of people. Kevin Sheedy was always very good. They just Keith Stackpole was very good to me. Slug Jordan. They sort of grab you, make you feel part of it, give you a bit of confidence.
So what makes the great writers? Who are the great reporters? I mean to say, you're a great reporter. I mean to say, everyone reads your column. You've got your own column.
I don't consider myself a great writer. I'm okay as a writer.
No, okay.
But I'm not in the level. Who would I say is a really good writer? Greg Bourne.
Yeah, Greg Bourne,
nice. Trevor Grant.
Yeah.
The late Trevor Grant.
A turn of phrase. They've got a good turn of phrase that really excites the reader.
Trevor could play in the centre on ball. Mike Sheehan and I might be halfback flankers.
Right.
Or back pocket on a bad day.
I see.
But then there's other parts of it. There's the strength of being able to ring the right person for the right quote, know who to go to. If Ron Barassi dies, there's all sorts of people you can ring. I want to find the most erudite person, it could be you, to give me the most pertinent quote about Ron Barassi.
That's right.
So don't waste time with a whole heap. Just use your noggin, and you might know a story about Ron Barassi, such as I did when the late Laurie Kerr, who played footy for Carlton, became a power broker of that footy club.
That's right.
You would have known him, Leon. Ran international public relations. I think it was in the 80s, And he was instrumental in getting Ron from Melbourne to Carlton originally back in 65. But Ron went to him and said he needed a loan. He was short on money. And could Laurie help raise some funds, which he did. And I'm talking significant money. And a group of four businessmen gave...
It was about $200,000, I think it was.
Something like that, Kirk. Something like that.
And I tell you what, it was at Lake Dick Pratt.
Yep.
And I remember when we celebrated Barassa's... pardon my intrusion.
No, that's fine.
Remember we celebrated Barassa's, I think, 30 or 50 years since football?
Yep.
At the Telstra Dome, or whatever it was called then. Remember when Dick Pratt got up to speak?
Yeah, it was at the function.
Yeah, Dick Pratt said, I really admire, you know, they were all eulogising Barassa, you know, a number of speakers. And Dick Pratt, I remember to this day, and it really surprised me that he even mentioned it. But he got up and he said, I really, and you know, after a period of time, he said, I really admired Ron Barassi for a lot of things. And not only that, but I remember lending him some money and he paid me back. He said, I like that.
Yeah, I think it might...
Do you remember him saying that?
Laurie Kerr's widow, Vivian, who died 2 months ago, she relayed the story.
Yeah.
And she said it was over $100,000.
Yeah.
Ron came to him a few years later and said, here's the what I owe you. Plus the interest that on my account.
Oh, it comes as no surprise. He's the most...
Not everyone does that.
Oh, he's the most principled, honest person you'd ever meet, Ron Barassi.
So he was a hero.
But Dick Pratt made reference to that night.
Yeah.
I remember it vividly. It's indelibly ensconced in my mind. I thought, it's a strange thing to say at a payment like this, but by the same token, it was also a big accolade.
I think it said more about Ron than his footy ability or coaching ability.
So you're more than a writer. You're a broadcaster with 3AW.
Yep.
You've done work with Sky and all sorts of others. So you've developed into an all-rounder.
Well, that's what happens, Leon, with journos, as you know. Probably the late Scotty Palmer was one of the first who went on TV on a Saturday night with Palmer's punchlines, keep on punching. And then he went through to radio. Mike Sheehan did that. So most journos now will do three mediums. Yeah. They'll do the TV, radio. I've been lucky enough to work with Ross Stevenson on AW for a long, over 20 years on the morning program, where I do two short spots, 7:25, 7:25. Working with Ross, who's one of the great doyens of Australian radio.
He'll go down
in the top five of all time.
Yeah.
I could argue number one. I'll give you a quick story about Ross Stevenson, what makes him great. The three of us, four of us, Dan, who's sitting here now producing the show, could read a book tonight, and then tomorrow morning you've got to relay from that book something in a very brief and humorous fashion. Ross could do that. He'd read the book quicker than us, and then the next morning he'd have a 30-second story from that book, which would be funny and accurate. And I remember there was a woman years ago up at a campsite in Queensland, a grandmother, and a crocodile had come into the campsite and grabbed her son, I think, and put her jaws around his leg and snapped his leg in doing so, as it would. She's jumped out of a tent, jumped on top of the crocodile, put a fork that she had near her into the crocodile trying to stab it, and she was dubbed, and the crocodile ended up nicking off because he didn't like what she was doing. And she was dubbed a hero, as you would be. And I remember Ross saying, I get what she did, but should she be made into a heroine? She's not exactly Joan of Arc or whatever. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, Russ Hinz's wife has been getting in bed with him for the last 30 years. So if you're about getting in bed with a rupture, she puts up with that. So he just has that way. And that'll give you a laugh in the morning as you're driving to work.
Yeah.
And that's all you need, one good laugh.
Geez, I don't know if that's the best analogy. He's a crocodile, but taking the kid's leg off and then rucking.
Russ Hinz, Russ is worse.
And tell me, you're a hardened journo now, but in your more formative years, when you're on the verge of a great story, you've got a good story, when have you given the right to go ahead? You've got to run it, obviously, through the editor to have it rubber stamped or verified or, you know, endorsed. How much is there, from your point of view, credo to run with the story as opposed to the editor saying to you, John, be very careful because there are ramifications if this doesn't come out the way that you envisage it?
Yeah, I can think of who are the leading journos, Mike Sheehan, Caroline Wilson, every journo I can think of has made a mistake, where they've gone with something that's been proven wrong. That's the most sickening feeling in your journalistic life.
Exactly.
You cannot. So you have to be, and I've done that, don't worry about that. You just hope. I remember someone said to me, Patrick Dangerfield's going to leave Adelaide and go to Geelong. And I was very friendly with the late Paul Couch. And Couchy used to cycle with someone who was involved in the deal at Geelong. And so
Bobby Crete.
I rang Couchy and said, you know, what's going on? And he said, oh, I think you'll find it's happening. So then I ring the manager, who I think was Paul Connors, and said, look, I'm running a story this weekend that Patrick Dangerfield's after the Adelaide game's going to announce he's coming over. And you hope that you can scare it out of. Connors said, OK, in that case, I better get a press release organised. And I said, you beauty, that's confirmation to me.
Yeah.
But still, until you hear it confirmed, Kev, you're on tenterhooks.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's no worse feeling than when
there's some real tricks to this. Some of the journos, one you mentioned before, they'd ring you up when I was involved with Fitzroy and say, is it true that Freddie Bear is going to coach Fitzroy? Oh, come off it, no hope.
Yeah.
And there'd only be two people in the van, yeah, Freddie Bear and somebody else. So if so facto, you've sort of pretty well given him the clue.
Yeah.
That was...
Yeah, that's smart.
Until you sort of learn to know what these tricks are, you can fall for it every time. So it's a two-way street, really.
Yeah.
And the other one, Ando, is... And I've often thought about this... The current ruling of, you know, I'm talking about, in my day, journos like the hardened journos, there was almost a a code of honour among the players, the journos, the administrators. You know, if there was a hot story around, the club didn't want it revealed, can you hold it back? And they would, from a principal point of view. But in return, there comes a time when you've got to repay it. And they did that, you know, to and fro, and then they had a good rapport. But, of course, the contemporary world, the landscape has changed dramatically because now we've got 600 journos. They all want that, you know, famous story and they'll, you know, go hell for leather.
Well, I think reporting these days is listening to the radio and listening to someone make a quote.
Yeah.
You could say if it's Gary Lyne on SEN or whoever, Jared Healy or whatever it might be, and reporting that quote. In the old days, you'd go to training, you'd get to meet the president of the club, Leon Weirgard. You get to meet the coach of the club, Robert Walls, it might have been, whoever it was at the time. You get to know the boot studder, Richmond, it might have been Charlie Callender. And that you would acquaint yourself with that club. You would have a few beers with them and they would have a bit of faith in you and trust in your kick. And
yeah, of course.
And what you're just talking about now. And sometimes, you're held off on the story. But I remember Scotty Palmer telling me he found out that Tommy Hafey was going to be sacked by Richmond at the end of 1976. That was a massive story at the time.
Of course.
Because Tommy had lost the faith of Graeme Richmond. And Tommy said, once that happened, I was out of there. And Tommy knew him, and Scotty knew each other really well. And their wives were Maureen and Laureen. Lorraine were very good friends.
Yeah.
But Scott said, I had to run with it. I could not do it, because if I did, someone else was going to break the story. So in that instance, you got to go.
Yeah.
What about revealing of sources? You know, from a journalistic point of view.
No, just... You don't need to. It's just the golden rule. You don't really. And I know some of those blokes I'm talking about, or journos, even now I can ask, who actually told you that story? And they still won't say it. And nor should they.
But that makes the world go round. If you're going to expose who your informant is, no one's going to say anything. So there'll be no news.
Well, you look at the courts, the laws of the land as we speak today. There's a big push to have, the journos reveal their sources.
Yeah.
Is that not right?
It is right, but they're still not doing it.
No, they're not doing it.
And some have gone to jail for that.
Exactly.
And good on them. I've got... that's part of the job, as I would.
It is a part of the job, and that's why I can't understand why they would want to put it into law.
Can I go back about to the 60s, when the Vang Seng Club started?
Yes.
The journos, the major footballers of the day, the real big players, would all drink together on a Friday night before the players went out, sat down, punched the shit out of each other. The journos would be there getting every story, every inside story, not one word was ever printed. Before it was, you were given the thumbs up by whoever you're talking about.
I think players would say, Leon, that that was a more enjoyable time all round.
Yeah. Oh.
But they weren't copping the big urns, and that's when Keck played, and 70s, 80s. That was and as a journo, you'd go to the aftermatch. You'd file your report, get into the rooms. Players from both teams would come into the room. Mm. You would have been there. You'd drink with them.
Even the umpires.
Even the umpires were allowed in. The maggots were allowed in sometimes. I remember being there one day, but I think it was, I was going to say it was Princess Park, might have been Arden Street. Phil Cracker walked in. And Rod Austin had been playing on him, and Phil's brother Jimmy hadn't played that day, but Jimmy thought that Phil had done something, that Rod Austin done something untoward. So suddenly, out of nowhere, Jimmy's just come flying past me, knocked my beer over, and gone whammo, and hit Curly Austin. Yeah, different times. Good fun, though. Not for Curly.
So where do you... I look at the contemporary landscape now. I look at some of the smut that's written. I can't believe it. You know, someone's having a wee at the back of a, you know, a back of a hotel in the wee small hours of the morning. Or, you know, something totally unrelated. You know, so the calibre of journalism, you know, in my estimation, outside of mainstream stuff, is, you know, cattle fodder almost.
Can I just wind back? Having a twinkle outside the back of a pub, mainstream. I say where you're coming from.
Excuse the analogy. Then for us it would be writing for the paper, not worrying so much. There'd be TV news at night, and then maybe a bit of radio. But the radio. But now it's you can go on Instagram. You can go to
social media. There's so many avenues and Twitter. Exactly.
So it's so competitive for those journalists that all they want to do is desperately get
their name
first,
out there.
So I was the one to break it.
Yeah.
But 10 minutes later, everyone else is doing the same thing. Yeah. So the public doesn't know that. But within... And journos have got big egos. Too many journos think that they're part of the story and they are stars, and they're not. You know, we're not. We're just... We're relaying the news to the public.
What's the biggest story you broke? Or what's the story you had, first and foremost, that you've had to hold on to and you couldn't release?
I remember...
And then your biggest story you've ever done.
I remember someone rang the rumour file of 3RW in whatever year it was, 2001, and there'd been a party in Melbourne where a player had gone into a toilet and the wife of a teammate was seen to have gone in, and they wanted to go on the rumour file with it. This was in the Wayne Carey, Anthony Stevens story. And I heard it, and they put the person on to me. And I thought, gee, this is there. I mean, I'm not someone who really relishes in exposing someone's misery, which was what it was going to become.
Yeah, sure.
All sorts of people were affected by that. I'm not sitting here in judgment either. But at the time, well, it's probably been the biggest story in football. Maybe the Essendon drugs saga would be another one, given how many pages were devoted to that story, because it had everything that a paper wants. In terms of breaking stories, Kick, I mean, Greg Williams leaving Sydney to go to Carlton, and I think he actually got rubbed out before he went there for doing it, for breaking the rules, which is maybe 10 matches before he's allowed to play. And I went through days and days of phone calls with different people, and Greg ended up ringing me and saying, if you run that, you're going to ruin it for me. I won't be able to go. And I knew Greg, and that gets a bit difficult then. Because do you want to, you know, ruin the bloke's chance to come back to Melbourne and play for a big club and ultimately a premiership, as he did? But fortunately, it worked out.
It's a funny thing about that. You know, the power of the press is extraordinary. You know, I didn't know Williams at all very well. I used to see him on the footy field. He was very good with a little low one into the ribs and all that.
Not just the ribs. He'd go to the head when need be as well. Ask Reece.
That was my impression of the bloke, that he was a dirty little bastard. Well, I've since met him. Well, self-effacing, nice guy.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of rumours about him, but just through the reading the paper.
Yep.
So there's a responsibility there in a way, but of course then you got to weigh that against what are you paid for. So away from footy for a moment, you've covered a whole lot of sports. Did you ever do tennis?
Not really. No, I struggle to watch tennis these days, Leo. I grew up watching it and went to the game when Jimmy Connors played John Newcombe in the 75 Australian Open at Kooyong. But I think it was the introduction of the big rackets, wham, bam, big serve. I love Federer. I love Roger Federer. I was lucky enough to meet him a few times. I'll tell you a very quick Federer story. A guy called George Lawler, who you'd both know, worked for Nike for years. George and his wife Jenny were at the casino. George was going out with some clients of Nike. And George knew Roger because he was a Nike client. Roger came out of a lift about 100 yards away, saw George, came walking straight down. He didn't know George really well. And George said, "Hi, Roger." He's pretty chuffed. It's pretty cool having Federer walk up to you. And he's, George said, this is my wife, Jenny. How do you do, Jenny? Very nice to meet you. Spoke to her, not George, for about 3 minutes, left. Same time next year, they're going to the same restaurant, Nobu, in the casino where you've both been. Without a word of a lie, Federer gets out of the lift at the same time. He's 100 yards away, whatever, 50 yards away, sees George and Jenny. Hi, Georgie. Hi, Jenny. How you going? Jenny, go, yeah, good. This bloke's remembered my name. That's like Keith Miller.
Yeah.
Keith Miller used to remember everyone's name, but that's the story about Roger Federer. Yeah.
And believe, how many cows do you reckon Roger Federer's got?
He's got two. He got Juliet for winning Wimbledon.
The big bells around there.
That's right. Yeah.
Did you ever meet Keith Miller?
I met Keith Miller quite a few times.
Down at the pub in Clarendon Street,
in the Wales Old Pub.
Yeah.
But when he moved down to Melbourne towards the end of his life, I had a bit to do with him, and I ended up getting his wine upgraded because someone at the Borderly I knew. Brian Gothard, the late Brian Gothard, who was a great character, found that Keith was drinking cask wine. He said, that's not good enough, so he organised for, I think it was a dozen bottles of Debortley each week for whatever it was.
Should have been Michelin.
Right.
It should have been. Well, it would be Michelin now.
It would have been Michelin now. Guys, it's the best drop.
And Jerry Ryan would probably do the same thing.
Say, I have to say this, and it's they're both dead. One's dead and one's not. But neither Keith Miller or the guy that you were superstar, Sobers, were great public speakers. That wasn't their go.
Miller, was it?
No, he was okay on the radio.
He's great in front of a pub crowd. He could regale you with any story.
Couldn't get a better person.
Yeah.
But just on the standing on his feet in front of a crowd, he just did it. You know, he just got there.
Yeah,
his name carried him through. And the same with Gary Sobers.
I haven't got much at home of photos or anything like that, certainly nothing of myself, but I do have a photo signed by Keith Miller. And there's a one of Polly Farmer signed a 63 Wegg poster, which along won that premiership. And what else have I got? Something from Gary Ablett, for my son, for Sam, one of my kids. So.
One thing that Keith Miller had was a fantastic memory for names. Oh, you said for names.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a bit personal, but I rang him. He's in Sydney. And I was taking the family, I don't know where the money came from in those days, but we were going to England with the family and then across to the West Indies, and there was a test match being played. And I rang, the phone rings. Hello, he said, who was it? Leon. Oh, hang on a minute. I thought, oh, God.
I'll get Princess Margaret for you.
So he said, I'm sitting down now. I only sit down when I'm talking to someone. I'm prepared to talk to you for a while. Otherwise, I get pretty short shift. That's very good. I said, now, Keith, I'm going to London with a family. Then I'm going to the West Indies and there's a test match on. Right, write all these down. There's the hire car bloke in England. There's the pub in England. There's the pub. And his phone numbers and all. Now, he hasn't got time.
It's all contra.
But there's nothing. No, he wouldn't have had time to look up a book or read it. This is all off the top of his head.
Extraordinary
memory. Now, you're going to the West Indies. The secretary, now ring him. This is his number, and that's a private line, so keep that to yourself.
He's amazing. Fantastic. You know, towards the end of his life, Keith would know this, John Paul Getty.
Yeah.
You know, that great American family, billionaires. One of them, who was a bit unusual, went over to England and bought a manor there and built a cricket ground, which I think is a replica of the Oval or Lords. He used to pay for Keith Miller to fly over every year, and Keith would stay with him. Keith told me the story. A huge drive, as you can imagine, tree-line drive. So Keith had a few strokes by this stage. He used to exercise in the morning in his pyjamas if the day was good enough. Walking down the driveway one morning, the Rolls Royce comes past, chauffeur-driven, and Getty's in the back. He said, Getty, we're going to get some milk. He said, oh, fair enough. So they head off from there. They head to Gatwick Airport. They get on board I'm going to say it was a Concorde. I reckon it was a Concorde. Fly to New York, because Getty likes the particular milk that they sell on the quarter, fifth, and eighth street or whatever. They get two bottles of the milk, come back, and his pyjamas the whole way. It's a true story.
Oh, that's eccentricity.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That is eccentric as you can possibly get. That's beacons of excess.
So, where to for you now? Do you see yourself doing anything else, or just until you just retire?
Until I get sacked. That's how it works.
Well, we all live in that sort of world.
Well, I like doing what I do, so I'll keep going as long as I can, I suppose. What else? What's the point? I don't play golf. I like going to lunch, but I can't sort of do that as well as I thought I could.
What about investments?
not much good at it. I've got some advice from you, which is good. You give me some good news for you, Kick.
And sorry.
Yeah, I know. I was going to get his association with Brian Brian Taylor.
It was through the late Trevor Grant suggested we get him as a columnist for the Zen Sunday Herald, the Murdoch tabloid. And Brian came and he couldn't spell his name, BT, so I goes round his, column in 1990.
You'll love this.
He said we're going to win the premiership, Collingwood. Well, I thought that's a bit rich, but if they did and we had a diary for the year, it would go okay. First game they gave it to Western Australia, he played, got taken off. One of their star recruits was Tony Francis. He got done for kicking somebody, got 6 weeks. I got beaten by 10 goals. I thought, this is a great idea, the diary. Anyway, we kept doing it. As you know, they won the premiership. He didn't play in it. He got dropped after the first final. But we got to know each other very well through that. And then he went to Paran the next year, and I got on his selection panel with Stephen Perry, who you'd know probably, and a journo called Tim Hable. We had a couple of years there.
Tim Well.
You know, Timmy Well, yeah. Tim's good
still
guy.
Involved.
Yeah, he is. So the club wouldn't exist without Tim.
No,
well, he was there when Kecker was.
He's been outstanding.
Kecker was playing in 78 Premiership.
You coached too?
Yeah, 78. We won the flag 78.
Yep. You were sent
out. Tell me, Andy, I mentioned earlier a prerequisite of being a good sportsman is being a man of letters and being able to put words into print. I guess also relationship, garnering strong relationships.
100%, Kick. That's most important thing.
The most important thing. And I talk to people and they say, wow, Caroline Wilson just broken a big story. And someone, left field will say, well, of course she would, because she's, she gets all the info
worse,
out of the AFL.
I know what you mean, the leak.
The AFL. She gets all the leaks. Or Andrew likes her, or someone does that, or...
Well, that's okay. That's to her credit.
And that's to her credit, exactly.
If she's built up that relationship, good on her.
So, I'm asking you, do you have... You would obviously endeavour to get that relationship.
I would find now if I rang... Say if I tried to ring Ian Chappell last week, which I did, or Kim Hughes yesterday, which I did, it'd be easier for me to get their respect and for them to call me back than it would have been 30 years ago. When you're younger, bloke, you want to say, listen, I'm not a bad person. I won't do the wrong thing by you, but the subject doesn't know that, so they don't have that trust for you. When you get older, they probably do, and they know you're not going to write rubbish about them.
No, exactly. So that's why that relationship is terribly, terribly important. And over the years, the teledex would be chock-a-block, I would imagine.
Not being able to write like Trevor Grant, not being able to go on the radio and be a superstar like Ross Stevens, the single most important part is building up relationships and knowing your subject. So any young journo, learn as much as you can about it, because you won't build up the relationship without getting their respect.
Yeah.
And you've got to know what you're talking about. They think you're a blithering idiot. If you go along and say, what's her name, Maccabi Diva, he's a great stallion, he'll go after winning 3 Melbourne Cups. Yeah. Maccabi Diva's a mare. Well, that wouldn't win much favour Lee Freeman, the trader.
Right.
So things like that. It's just you've got to know what
How about your memory? Have you got a naturally good memory? Or is it...
Like a steel trap?
Leon, not only for certain things.
Yeah.
If you asked me the Dow Jones Index, I wouldn't have a clue or any interest in it. And I wasn't particularly good at a lot of subjects at school because I wasn't retentive when I didn't have an interest. If you asked me, I was going to go on to the fairer sex at that stage, I won't go down that path. But I've got a memory for people, memory for music. I love music and movies and sport, obviously, and friends. I remember friends pretty well, hopefully,
Well, it works very well for you. We're just about out of time. Sam?
He's a superstar. Look, he's got a memory, because he's such a humble person. But I tell you what, don't ever go to a trivia night with him. Because you run a distant second.
No, I'd be on the same team.
You'd be on the same
you
team.
Go
okay, we'd be on the same team. All right. Okay, you've got me there again.
All right. Trivia champion John Anderson. Sport and Life. Now, great to have you, John.
Yeah, thanks,
good
thanks,
luck
Kick.
In the
now,
future.
Also, John, I don't know, have you made John aware of?
One of our long-winded final wrap-ups.
No, it's not long-winded. I'll praise it for you. Have you made John aware of what we do to each guest that is a part of our podcast?
No, because it's a fabrication.
I beg your pardon.
My neighbours come around to my place, knocking, can I have some of the groggy garage?
This is etched in stone. This is etched in stone.
Where do you live, Len?
From day one, it was a given that every attendee and is a guest of Life and Sport will be in receipt.
Sport and Life.
Will be in receipt a brilliant product from Mitchelton Wines in the form of two bottles.
Right.
Well, hang whatever on. Their choice may be, whether it be red or white, which we promote on a regular basis.
Great wine.
It's a fantastic product and a great wine.
Well, it's very kind of Mitchelton. I've been to Mitchelton in years.
No, John, before you give it a wrap, I would like to suggest you hear me out.
I was going to double game for double. I thought I might get half a day.
No, John, you better listen intently.
Sorry, Ken.
Yes. Now, we've been doing this for now, Leon, almost a decade.
Coming up for 200 guests.
Yeah, 200.
3 years.
3 years. Dan, you're the producer. I don't need superfluous information. If we do the talking, you do the gadgeting. How long's it been, Dan?
3 years.
It's
been 5 minutes since we said goodbye to John.
In that period, John, well, 3 years, we'll work it out. Hundreds and hundreds of guests. Same thing applies in principle in receipt of two bottles. What you don't know is Leon is in charge of distribution, whatever your choice may be. To this day, for memory, one person has been receipt of his bottles. We have got 900 letters of not intent, but certainly of litigation, illegals, that are pending at the moment. To my memory, stock has left the premise to the point of dispatch, which is Leon's premise in Carlton.
How should I receive the four bottles?
Now, there's the question. Now, that's a good question.
It was four, was it? Four bottles.
Yeah,
now.
I thought four. It was four. Sorry.
Doubled up.
I suggest what you do, and I was vest. Were you chuffed initially when you made that last question you asked him? How good's his memory? Only in certain matters, and wine wasn't one of them. Thank God.
The only guests that we've squared up are the ones that have passed away since.
Oh, good one, Dan. You have to throw that one in. Rest in peace. But Mitchelton is a wonderful product, and
Why so it was your idea to do that, and I'm left with a bag all the time.
Well, you are, but, you know, Leon, you've got a wonderful way about you, and you'll appease the aforementioned guest.
Anyway, the intention is to get you acquainted with the Mitchelton product. But you might have to do a bit of work.
But our pathways cross regularly. So there'll be ample opportunity for us to
I'm having breakfast with you Thursday morning, so that's a good start.
Well, Thursday morning we might catch up with the great Rodney Hogg and Nando having breakfast.
Hoggy from
next week, Craig Willis will join us.
And Craig Willis.
You've been on Sport and Life with John Anderson.